Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hi, everyone. Good morning, and welcome to First Things First. We made it to Tuesday. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This right here
last
is
Tuesday. Didn't know it was Tuesday. Correct. Thought it was Wednesday.
That's why I'm so
Monday
excited.
Night football had been played on a Tuesday.
I know. That threw me off all week. Mm-hmm. We got a great show for you today. Tuesday. Jerry Jones knows the Cowboys need to get better. Tom Brady loves his defense, but has questions about his offense, and the Browns of new look like the Browns of old on Monday Night Football. That's where we start. Baker and the Browns in San Francisco. Cleveland looking to climb above 500 for the first time since 2014, and after last night, it may as well have been 2014. Richard Sherman picking off Baker Mayfield later in the first. Baker sacked, fumbles, the ball recovered by Nick Bosa just under 5 minutes left in the first half. Baker, right here, throws, intercepted again, looking for Antonio Callaway in the red zone. Baker Mayfield with a terrible 8-for-22, 100 yards, 3 turnovers on the night. Oh, and that, Nick Bosa doing Baker's flag plant at Ohio State a few years back. Some people never forget. Despite the loss, Baker Mayfield, as he says after almost every loss, still not ready to panic.
Once again, I'm not hitting the panic button. I think for us, it's just, we know the problem. We know we have to, be better. We just have to do better. And when you play a great team, you have to eliminate mistakes. You just have to. We know exactly what we need to do. We need to play well. We need to do our job each and every play. And not lose sight, the goal at hand.
You can't have mistakes. You can't have, turnovers. You can't have drops. You can't have penalties. That's offensively, that kind of summed us up, We just shot ourselves in the foot too many times.
If only that was the first game where they had too many penalties and made too many mistakes and shot themselves in the foot too many times. Nick, what went so wrong for the Browns?
Well, everything went wrong for the Browns. And there was a moment in this game where it looked like, despite the terrible start, the Browns were actually going to be able to get back into it. They're down 14-3. They're driving. Baker throws one of his few good passes of the day to Antonio Callaway, the young receiver fresh off suspension. Callaway is going to fall into the end zone, catch a touchdown. It's going to be 14-10. Callaway somehow not only doesn't catch it, pops it up in the air. It is intercepted, and the route is on. I bring that up for this reason. That was the last moment the Browns had a chance to win. But they had plenty of moments after that to stay competitive, and they couldn't. And they couldn't, to me, for two primary reasons. One is what you talked about, C, off the air yesterday, actually, because we didn't talk much about this game on the air, which is your big concern about the Browns' offensive line dealing with first-round pick after first-round pick after first-round pick.
Top of the first round.
The lowest drafted defensive lineman the Niners have is Eric Armstead, who was taken 17th. DeForest Buckner was taken 7th. Solomon Thomas was taken 3rd. And Nicky Bosa, who you've known since he was 10 years old, if not younger, was taken 2nd and had his best game of his career, of his very young career, I should say. So the Niners' D-line dominated the Browns' O-line. That's the first reason. And the second reason is Baker Mayfield was awful again. Baker Mayfield struggled again. Baker completed 8 passes, had a passer rating of 13. For context, if you just spike the ball on every play, you get a passer rating of 39. So he was as bad as you can be statistically in this game. Not all his fault, because he was under constant duress. But one last point, see, I thought Richard Sherman said something really interesting, where because Sherman had the first pick, and he said Baker's just got to eat that. He's got to know he can't make that play. And then he also added, I knew he couldn't see over Eric and Buck, meaning Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. Richard Sherman, the veteran corner, knew a 6-foot-tall quarterback dealing with those monsters on the D-line is going to have problems. That was the story of the game. As while the Browns, Baker might not be panicking, but it is close to panic time in Cleveland, especially if you look at their next two opponents.
Yeah, what went wrong was one team was well-rested,
coming off the bye, well prepared. Kyle Shanahan hadn't had the talent, hadn't had the arsenal to be able to be in the conversation, but he's one of the best play callers that we have. And regardless of what people try to say about Kyle Shanahan, all these young guys, they're turned into head coaches, your guy there with the Rams and everything, Sean McVay, it's a lot of hocus pocus, but man, they're trying to hit you in your belly with a gut shot trying to run the football. It's not trying to throw the football. It's not like college. It looks very, very different than pro football. But Kyle Shanahan is a very good coach. And you could see they had it scripted out as far as what they wanted to do against that Browns defense, and they went to attacking them. And when you run that type of offense where you're going to have a fullback, tight ends, and you're going to play a game like it's in the phone booth, a lot like New England did at the end of the season and through the playoffs, you have to have some explosive plays. That was the big difference. That's what went wrong for Cleveland. If you have a team like that, I mean a powerful team, they got two, three running backs they can throw at you. They throw three tight ends at you. Their offensive line, big, strong offensive line. You have to try to stop them from big plays. And from the first snap, as you could see, they ran that inside zone and he cut it back. And Cleveland was ready for it. They had eight guys in the box. The 49ers, that play and every other play that I saw last night, knocked Cleveland off the ball the same way Cleveland went and attacked Baltimore. That was the game plan of Kyle Shanahan and this staff. It was a great performance by the 49ers.
I know we always say, well, they have a shoddy offensive line. Look, the Patriots have a shoddy offensive line, and they're figuring out a way to win. I don't want to put that all on that line. But Baker Mayfield said it's not time to panic. Meanwhile, you got Seattle and you got New England in the next couple of weeks. If this isn't time to panic, what is this time? I mean, how do they right the ship at this point?
Well, the offensive line personnel is not going to get better. So Baker has to be better despite that. You could all argue Freddie Kitchens needs to go back to what he was doing at the end of last year, which is helping the offensive line out with more two tight end personnel, more 12 personnel. Every time they were in a third and must pass situation when they went to 11 personnel, it ended in a Baker sack or a hit. They could not block the Niners in 11 personnel, and for some reason, Kitchens wouldn't go to 12. But for Baker, he got stopped turning the ball over now. Like, this is a real thing. 18 starts, 22 picks, 10 fumbles, 26 total turnovers. Like, some of those fumbles they've recovered, fortunately, but 32 opportunities for turnovers caused by Baker, 26 have actually been turnovers, and he is not the quarterback he was last year. In fact, side by side, you would think the column on the right is his rookie season, and the column on the left is his improved second season, but it's not. The column on the left is last year. Column on the right is this year. That is obviously a line going in the absolute wrong direction. It's not all because they lost Kevin Zeitler, their offensive guard, in the offseason. Baker's been turning the ball over and has not been making the big plays that he made last season. First game of his career without a touch, first start of his career without a touchdown last night, just part of the problem.
Well, they don't have to hit the panic button yet, but they do have to make some serious decisions. And you could see two of Baker's interceptions, they were trying to throw the ball to who? Antonio Callaway. Another guy coming off suspension. It's his first game back, trying to force feed him. During the game, I felt as if they were trying to get Odell Beckham, and they were so trying to get him involved in the game instead of attacking the 49ers defense. 49ers, what they did was attack the Browns defense. What Cleveland, I saw, thought they were doing was calling plays to try to make people happy. Antonio's coming back. Let's get him a couple balls. Odell, we didn't get him involved in the Baltimore game, even though we looked great. Let's get him involved early. Let's have him throw a pass. Man, Odell completes that pass early in the first play of the game. They didn't get a completed pass for another 14 minutes. Like, so for Freddie Kitchens, they have to decide, with that offensive line being weak, do I play more tight ends? Do I put one of those wide receivers on the bench? That is a real, real question. And the other thing is, we better give San Francisco some credit.
Yes.
Because we might get to December and look back and say, man, did we miss it? I'm not going to be a part of that. All right? This is a good football team after a week's rest that I believe was well coached in Cleveland, does not match up with the San Francisco 49ers, especially on that offensive line. But I guarantee you, we're going to be on this TV a lot on Sundays and Mondays talking about San Francisco, and you know what? Made another offensive line look bad, because that defensive line right now is on par to be the best defensive line that we have in the NFL.
There's the Cowboys team that went 3-0 against the Giants in Washington and the Dolphins. And then there's the team that looked pedestrian in back-to-back losses to the Saints and the Packers. Jerry Jones says that, quote, we're going to have to get better to be where we dream to be. See, what do the Cowboys need to do to get back on track, to get back to the team we saw the first couple of weeks?
Well, the reality is you have to adjust to the personnel that you have. We, for the last couple of years doing this show, we talked about how the league, collective bargaining agreement, less practices, less contact, less padded days, less continuity on that offensive line. But the good teams adjust to what they have compared to what we thought we were going to be. And the Dallas Cowboys, without Teron on that left side, their left tackle, they've struggled with him being out of the lineup. Now they got Collins out on the right side for an extended period of time. You're not going to be a big, powerful football team. You can't fight in the phone booth. You need to try to be creative. And now become the pressure is on Kellen Moore as the first-year offensive coordinator, where they hit some struggles. How does he create some offense for the Dallas Cowboys? The pressure's not on the players. Yeah, next man up. Yeah, hypothetically. But you can design things to be able to take the pressure off that offensive line, get the ball in your playmaker's hands, and still try to generate some big plays. Because without big plays in this offense is just another offense trying to run the ball with a good running back. So Kellen Moore, to me, is the number one variable as far as the Cowboys moving forward. Next game, I want to see what type of style. Because you can't be the same team when you lose both of your tackles. You can see New England. Man, they ran the ball. Last two games of the season, through the playoffs in the Super Bowl, they came back. I said, hey, man, they're going to be a knockdown, drag-out team. They tried to. They don't have the line to do it. So what they do, Tom Brady, did he drop back 30 times in the first half against Washington? People's like, well, the line's bad. No, because they can trust him to get rid of the football. 2.2 to 2.5 seconds, so they can run their offense that way. Now, I know everyone's not New England, but Kellen Moore's been paid a hell of a lot of money. He's gotten that position to be creative, and that's what I'm going to be watching as we move forward, because if they don't change their identity, they will be just an 8-8, an average football team, Nick.
And here's the thing. They are going to look like they are back on track this weekend. Because their track is they will beat terrible teams. And they play the Jets. And so they're going to look good against the Jets, and we're going to say, okay, maybe the games against New Orleans and Green Bay were an aberration.
But I'm going to tell you something, Nick. I believe the Jets are going to be a different team. So don't
– this is not the – coming back?
Yes. Like, Darnold coming back, he practiced Wednesday, practiced Thursday. He must have had some setback. He's probably going to be cleared later on today. I do believe they will be a different team
with a decent defense
with Darnold. So I'm just saying.
Okay, so the point that I'm – maybe that'll be the case. I got to see where Darnold is in what is essentially the very beginning of year two for him, because it's not as if we went into the season thinking Darnold was going to be some massive force multiplier for the Jets. It was more his trajectories on the way up. Yep. This will be a good developmental year, and then it obviously got sidetracked by the mono. But you said if they don't do X, then they're an 8-8 team. And my concern with the Cowboys, not that they're an 8-8 team, they're a little bit better than that. And they have the personnel when they play an inferior opponent to look really good. And when they play an equal opponent, to play them really close and see how it comes down to. But when they play one of those 6-8 teams that you will have to get through in order to make your first conference championship in a quarter century, you get outclassed. And I think that's what Jerry's concerned about. We always joke about Jerry, but Chris says, and he's right, Jerry knows some football.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry's watched a lot of Cowboys football, and he knows what the great Cowboy teams look like, what the good Cowboy teams look like, what the average and the bad Cowboy teams look like. And I think he's watched these first 5 weeks and said, man, this reminds me a lot of the beginning of the Jason Garrett era, where we weren't terrible, we weren't great, where we beat the bad teams, maybe upset one good team a year, and we were trying to sneak into the playoffs. This Cowboys team, you do not pay Lyle Collins, who I know is now probably going to be out, make him the highest paid right tackle in the league, make Zeke the highest paid running back in the league. You have three of the other highest paid offensive linemen, pay Jalen Smith like no inside linebacker's ever been paid. Get ready. You do all those things because you think you can be in the cream of the crop in the league, the very least in your division. And I haven't seen that from Dallas. I have seen that they can dominate bad teams, and they struggle to move the ball against good defenses. And I know Dak threw for 460, scored 24 points. They were down 31-3. And once you get down 31-3, anything you do after that, to me, is almost irrelevant. They struggled to move the football for nearly seven straight quarters against the first seven quarters they played of good defenses. That is a massive concern for the until they prove otherwise to me.
I think the same thing you say about their offense, that without big plays, it's just another offense, can also be said about Dak Prescott. Without Dak Prescott, without some big, strong leadership roles, big plays from him, he just looks like another quarterback. Colin said yesterday on the show all day, I think he's losing money every time he goes out there, where he once would pay him $35 million. He's like, I wouldn't pay him more than, you know, $27 to $30 million now. How much of this is on, I know you said the pressure is not on the players, but on a guy who supposedly leads this team in Dak Prescott to go out there and stop the bleeding before it gets too
far. Right. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of pressure, especially on Dak Prescott. Now, Dak does a good job in the press conferences, and from the people I've talked to in Dallas or close to the team, he's a remarkable leader. But the reality is, Jenna, and that's what I said in the first 2 weeks of the season, let's not forget, this guy's got a lot of money on the table. I thought it was phenomenal that he could play that the way he did. But now you have four quarters against the Saints, you got four more quarters against Green Bay, that money's still sitting on the table. So, when I thought he was doing good, now they face some tougher competition. To me, if I'm his advisor, I'm trying to get this behind us. I don't want it to be a distraction for the team. And people say, well, why is it a distraction for the team? Well, it should have been done. He shouldn't be negotiating the first big contract of his life during the season. There's enough problems we're going to have, what we're going to run this week, who's not going to be able to play this week, what part of the defense are we trying to take advantage of? And every week I got to check in, how that money over there doing? This is Dak's first big payday. So it's very, very important. But as a priority, it's hard to just put all those different things in different compartments. I mean, he is human, and it is realistic. He could be losing money
and
every week.
It's hard in any professional capacity to focus exclusively on your job if you, the days before, the weekend before, lost some money, had a business endeavor go badly. I'm not involved in other businesses, but I gamble. I'm going to be honest. You guys can tell a little bit on the show Monday morning if I had a great gambling weekend or a terrible gambling weekend. There's a little part of my brain that's either feeling great or feeling sick. I know you guys both have outside endeavors or investments or whatever. I would imagine when things are going great, you feel one way. When they're not, that you feel another. That is just, as you put, he's human. And if I'm Dak, there has to be an element, even if I've taken out the insurance policies, even if I have the loss of value and the injury and all of this, to think to, man, wait, should I have just $100 million guaranteed, bird in the hand, as opposed to trying to up it as high as you can up it and watch it slowly dwindle. And so I think that is an element. Listen, I've been wrong on his money. I said he was going to sign before week one because I didn't think he was going to take any of these chances. Remember Coach Mangini asked me, he was like, have you talked to somebody? I said, no, it's just common sense to me. We're now in October. He hasn't signed yet. I don't think that is the reason the Cowboys lost the last two games, but I agree with Chris. I don't think it's helping the situation where their quarterback has the biggest financial moment of his life still pending and looming over.
All right, week five of the NFL officially in the books. As it stands today, the New Orleans Saints are the favorites to win the NFC, followed by the Packers, Eagles, Rams, Niners, and Cowboys. It sets up a fun discussion. Nick, who's the best team in the NFC?
Right now, to me, there is a clear hierarchy, and the hierarchy is the Saints and the Packers, and then everybody else. And so, and by the way, in that list, I think the Seahawks are wild disrespected. Seahawks were not on that list. Seahawks, maybe it's because of the division that they're in, because they have to deal with the Niners and the Rams, but I think the Packers have shown you, and the Saints have shown you, they can beat really good teams without their first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback playing well in Green Bay situation or playing at all in New Orleans situation. And that's what differentiates them for me with the rest of the teams. They are healthier than other teams because Davante Adams, while he's out with the turf toe, that is not the type of injury that you think, is he going to be back by the end of the season? And Drew Brees, while he's out right now, we know when he is coming back or that he is coming back at midseason. They don't have the structural injuries series of lost this player for the year. This guy is out for 6 to 8 weeks. I also think right now they're a team that can, both those teams have shown you, we can beat you running the football, we can beat you with our defense, and oh yeah, by the way, we have the two of the three best quarterbacks in the NFC in Breeze and Rodgers. So to me, those two teams are tied for first. I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but I think those two teams are neck and neck, and then I would slot in other teams. I'm not as high on the Niners just yet. I have real concerns about the Rams, and as I mentioned, I think the Seahawks are a little disrespected, and Philly's lurking. We need to see what Philly can be once they get their full complement of players back, but Saints and Packers are, to me, the clear top two teams.
Yeah, Jenna, I believe that the 49ers should be part of the conversation because I believe their style is so contrasting to any other style. How can a team in a short period of time get ready for that style? Their quarterback, can they throw the ball down the field? That's probably the biggest question mark. But I believe the Saints, they should have a significant edge over the Packers for a number of reasons. Head coach, playoff experience, and the disappointment the last 2 years in the playoffs. 2 years ago, Minneapolis Miracle. Stephon Diggs happens to him. They got that game won. Then they're going to go to Philadelphia. They could potentially be going back to the Super Bowl. We know last year, as far as the call, there in the Superdome went against them against the Rams. They could have been in another Super Bowl. So they got a lot of young players that have won a lot of big games and been a part of big-time situations. The old NFL used to be you lose the first round of the playoffs. Next time you lose the divisional round, you get to the championship game, then you go to the Super Bowl. I think this Saints organization is built to ready to take. Now, Green Bay's talented, but they haven't been in a good playoff race the last couple years. And Aaron Rodgers has been out of the playoffs the last couple.
One thing that for New Orleans, that this Teddy Bridgewater stretch, why it's been so important is because this tilts massively if these two teams play in the playoffs based on where that game is played. If it's in Green Bay in January versus in the confines of the Superdome. Now, the Saints aren't drawing dead outdoors because they have shown they can run the ball, they can play good defense, unlike some Saints teams in the past. But if Teddy doesn't keep them on pace right with the best teams in the conference, then home field is gone. That's when Drew Brees got hurt, that's what I thought they sacrificed. I didn't think they were knocked out of the playoffs, but I thought they sacrificed any opportunity to have home field go through their building. Teddy's obviously undefeated and has kept them right where they need to be.
So did last night change your opinion at all? Would this be a different conversation if you had seen the 49ers last night?
It wouldn't be a different conversation as to teams at the top, but I'm still worried about, okay, the Saints. Can they block the 49ers? Every team. Can they block the Green Bay? Can they block the 49ers? Green Bay would have a hell of a time going against that 49ers front. So last night is part of the story. The 49ers, they deserve the right for us to be talking about them. They haven't been on the National League map for the last couple years. So right, there's going to be a number of people slow to the party like my guy Nick Wright.
I might not have.
He'll be sitting back in the corner.
On to the Patriots now, one of two remaining undefeated teams left in the league. We just talked about the Niners. It is no secret that Tom Brady and his offense aren't clicking at the rate they're used to. Just 13th in yards per game this season. They finished 6th in that same category last season. Brady knows his offense needs to be more consistent. Take a listen.
You know, it's not always going to go great in the first quarter. It's not always going to go great in the second quarter. It's not always going to go great through three quarters, but you play 60 minutes of football. You try to make adjustments throughout. You know, you take the good with the bad, and you just, again, I think a lot of it comes down to mental toughness. So when you put yourself in the position that we're in, you know, you get a chance every week to go out there and put on a great show. And I think it's frustrating for all of us when it doesn't go the way that we hoped. You know, if you think about it, I think 5-0's, I mean, you can't be record-wise any better than that. So, you know, for us as an offense, you know, we've got to figure out how to be more consistent, how to be more dependable.
Yes, you see, they are 5-0, but not because of number 12 and not because of that offense. That defense has been stellar. Do you trust Brady in the offense to get back on track, be a little more consistent the rest of the season?
I can't trust him right now because if you look at the amount of substitutions they've made on their offensive line. So every week, their offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniel, Dante Scarnecchia, offensive line coach, they have to figure out what are our best protections for this week. So there's no type of continuity. It's hard to be consistent when you have, oh, my center's out. Oh, my left tackle's out. Oh, now the right tackle's out, and I got to move another guy into guard. All these moving parts. You don't have everything that Tom Brady knows about football. They can't operate under that mode. Oh, let's pull back some stuff we did 4 years ago. No, they're trying to perfect some basic things. They know their special teams have been great, elite. Their coverage teams are great. Their defense, they believe, is elite. Tom Brady and them aren't going to blow it by turning the ball over. They know the makeup of the team, but their wide receiver, Edelman's missed a significant amount of time, not only in training camp, but the first couple weeks of the season with that chest injury. Josh Gordon, I don't know how much Josh weighs right now, but I would be saying this is the heaviest I've ever seen him playing, and I don't know if he can carry that weight. New England does a lot of lifting during the season. They're in the old fashion as far as, man, doing dumbbells, barbells, squats. A lot of teams don't do that during the season. New England does that. And Josh is a bulky guy. I wonder how fast he is right now. So in practice, are they able to time things up? And to me, it doesn't seem like they've had great practice because there's so many guys going in and out of the lineup. So it's going to be hard for them. I would give them another 3 or 4 weeks until they face especially some stiffer competition till we start seeing some type of consistency. But I wouldn't be surprised if this offense, because of lack of talent, especially on that offensive line, if they don't struggle all year.
If you're not concerned about the Patriots offense, A, I believe you're not really paying attention, and B, you definitely have them winning the Super Bowl in a rout. I mean, this defense has allowed 2 touchdowns. We're through 5 games. Now, I know they haven't played great offenses on the other side, but they've allowed 2 touchdowns. The defense has been spectacular. But the offense, the offense has played one defense with a pulse, the Buffalo Bills. In that game, that offense scored 9 points. Tom Brady had his worst quarterback rating in 13 years. Okay? That was the only team that offered any resistance. There are other 4 games where the offense, by the end of the game, has scored 30 points and is blowing you out. Those teams are a combined 1-17.
Washington gave them fits the first half, and they just fired the coach.
Exactly right. The Jets are not right now a competent organization. The Miami Dolphins right now are the worst team in the league. Pittsburgh, beginning of the year, I know they still had Big Ben, but they didn't have Minkah Fitzpatrick yet. The defense, Devin Bush was playing his first career game. That defense has gotten better, but that game didn't play well. I don't trust this Pats offense. Who were the most important people on the offense when they won the Super Bowl last year, other than Tom Brady? Where their left tackle was very important. He plays for a different team now, and his backup is on IR. Their center was arguably their most important offensive lineman. He's on IR. Rob Gronkowski doesn't play football anymore. James Devlin, old neck roll Devlin, and we saw in last night's game, before Juszczyk got hurt, by the way, the value of one of the last really good fullbacks in the league.
Yep.
Devlin's not there. What did they add? Well, they brought Josh Gordon back. To Chris's point, what version of Josh Gordon did they bring back? Edelman has been dinged. Philip Dorsett went out of this football game injured. Now
it speaks to why they really needed, and more so than wanted, Antonio Brown.
And it speaks to
why they took the chance, Jenna.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Why they had him practice on that Friday when they knew that there was more information coming out. They desperately needed him to play.
Why they decided to, even after Ben Watson, old man Ben Watson. Ben Watson, most memorable play of his career, came in, I believe, the 2006 AFC Championship game against Denver when he chased down the guy who had picked off the pass. I mean, let him come back and said, we'll hold on to you during your suspension to see if you can give us anything.
Yes.
He just got cut. They are searching offensively. And the guy who's always been able to solve it for them, Tom Brady, has looked like a 42-year-old. No, he's looked like a 38-year-old quarterback. Not a 38-year-old Tom Brady, but he's looked like a quarterback that is approaching the very end. Now, because he's 42, he's still playing at the highest level any quarterback his age has ever played at. That's because only like Moon and I think Warren Moon, Favre got close to it. No quarterbacks have ever done it. But I said this before the show, and I mean it. In 2017, the New England Patriots had 3 quarterbacks on their roster: Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Jacoby Brissett. In 2019, the quarterback of those three that's playing the worst is Tom Brady. And I don't know if that continues, but he doesn't have the cavalry coming to help him reinforcement-wise on the offensive line or his skill position, guys. Now, the defense will carry him, and Belichick will carry him, but I don't know the offense is going to get much better.
But, man, for a team that won the Super Bowl, how blessed are they with the schedule the NFL gave them this year? They got really lucky to be able to stay in games without even barely playing offense. All All right, Kenny, in your opinion, what went so wrong for the Cleveland Browns last night?
Well, it looked like one team was ready to go out there and play a football game and execute, and the other team just thought they could roll their helmet out there and get a win. Now, I know that the 49ers had the bye week, so you would expect them to be prepared. You would expect that they would be sharp, especially in situational football in all three phases, and I think that we saw that. But also, when you look at the Cleveland Browns overall, some of the mistakes they made are just inexcusable. All of the turnovers, going 0-for in the red zone, being 1 of 11 on third down, that's an issue. And so for me, I question whether or not Freddie Kitchens had this team prepared to play a football game. And when you saw the way that they got dominated last night, it's hard to imagine that they had a great week of practice and they put this team under a microscope. I think they underestimated their opponent, the San Francisco 49ers. They looked at their schedule and said, you know what? They really haven't beaten anybody. This is a team that on paper we have more talent than. We should be able to go out there and win this game.
Especially were, coming off the win they had last
week. And they were in for a rude
week.
Awakening. And exactly right. I think that's undersold
yes.
in terms of them being able to come off an emotional win on the road against the divisional rival in the Baltimore Ravens. One of the questions we had about this team coming in was not only how they would handle adversity, but also how they would handle success. And so when you have yep. a win like that,
that's a real thing.
Coming off of the embarrassment that they had on Sunday Night Football against the Rams, I just felt like going into this game, mm-hmm. the Cleveland Browns weren't as prepared Absolutely. As they should be.
So going into the season, there were two major questions with the Browns. Right now, they are failing in response to both those questions. One was the offensive line. The other was the head coach. And I'm not saying the head coach is a failure. I'm saying up to this point, he is failing. There's a difference there. The offensive line, we were worried about. The offensive line got obliterated last night. There was by a very talented and very highly drafted defensive line. So credit to San Francisco for putting their resources there. But it was Baker Mayfield under duress the entire game. The biggest concern, though, for me with Cleveland is they have a third issue that, for me, was not one of the questions going into the season, and that's the quarterback. They going into the season, one of the reasons that I was not worried, as worried about the lack of talent on the offensive line, I was not as concerned about the uncertainty of the head coaches, all that talent on defense, the bringing in Odell on offense, and that Baker, after setting the NFL record for passing touchdowns by a rookie, despite not even playing the entire season, I thought he was poised to be not a league MVP, but in that next tier, mm-hmm. that tier of excellent quarterbacks that would be in the discussion for league MVP at some point during the season. He's been the opposite. And I can show you Baker's numbers compared to another young quarterback if you'd like to see him. And it's a comparison no young quarterback I would imagine would want to be in. Baker this year, there's his numbers. There's a guy on the right. The guy on the right has more touchdowns, fewer picks, a better passer rating, more yards per game, and a far better completion percentage. And by the way, those numbers on the right aren't great. That guy on the right is, that ain't great. It's Josh Allen. The Buffalo Bills now are winning despite Josh Allen. The Cleveland Browns cannot win despite their quarterback. Mm. They have to win in part because of their quarterback. So Freddie Kitchens hasn't done a great job. The offensive line is as beleaguered as we thought it might be. And Baker is having a brutal start to his season.
The one thing that there was little discussion about was with all the hype, they got very few players that have won. I think they only got 11 players with playoff experience on their roster. Jenna talked about it. Well, what when something bad happens? Because every NFL team, New England, we saw them struggle last year or opening month of the mm-hmm. season. They did get it together. They get it together better than most teams. What would they do when facing adversity? And we saw every time Baker Mayfield, every time they lost, he came to the mic and it was the media's fault. Oh, people are going to give up on me. I like his press conference afterwards because he said, we got to play better. It's not the media's fault. You need to look yourself in the mirror. Baker Mayfield is the franchise quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. And at some point, he might be great. But we need to stop trying to figure out who's going to be what after seeing them a little bit of time in the NFL. It takes a long time to make a great career in this league. But, and I think we as media people, we don't do a good job of it as far as granting all these people immediate stardom. Oh, this guy's going to be the next great. I've seen a lot of guys have one good season, and that being either a rookie year or a journeyman have one great year, and then the next year they come back down to earth. It takes a true professional to work at your craft, and Baker Mayfield is, because there's a lot of good quarterbacks, but how can I be good with a bad offensive line? Tom Brady and the good ones have shown how to be able to do it. That's what Baker Mayfield's, that's his task. How do I be good compared with this the offensive line? This is the worst one I've played with. Oklahoma, best offensive line in football when he was there. Last year's offensive line, top 10 in the NFL. This one, at the bottom of the NFL, Canty.
Well, CeCe, a part of the reason why they drafted Baker Mayfield first overall is because he could overcome some of the deficiencies of the team, the guys that are around him. And so when you look at this offensive unit, he's got skill position players out the wazoo, but what's the problem that they have in terms of matchups on a week-in, week-out basis? It's the offensive line. So Baker has got to find a way to be able to navigate around that. Now, one of the things that could help this Cleveland Browns offense is not turning over the football.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have that amount of turnovers, especially in the first half of games, then that helps the other team. That gives them extra possessions. That gives them more opportunities to put points on the board. When you have a double-digit deficit, guess what you have to do? You have to get away from your running game, and you have to throw the football. Mm-hmm. And that's advantage San Francisco with their defensive front. I watched you run down the defensive front that they got. Arik Armstead, Defoe, DeForest Buckner, who's one of the best interior defensive linemen in the National Football League. Last night was a coming-out party for Nicky Bosa. Well, I mean, a part of why those guys were able to have that success is because you had to get away from the run game. I mean, if you take out that 37-yard run that Nick Chubb had on that trap play, I mean, he only averaged 3.3 yards a carry. So
coming off the game that he had
coming off of the game,
when we thought, well, we've seen the rediscovering of Chubb.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's not a rediscovery. We recognize if you got a bad offensive line, you probably should run the football as much as you try to drop back and throw the football. They had 29 rush attempts against the Ravens, and that worked out. Last night, they only had 17, and one of them was a gadget with Odell. So, to me, Freddie Kitchens has a clear formula in terms of how his team needs to play in order to have success. And that's not Baker Mayfield dropping back to throw the ball as much as they did last night. That's trying to be more balanced on the offensive side of the ball and running Nick Chubb.
And that balance comes from Chubb. This offense, I know. I love OBJ. He's exceptional. I like Baker. Baker's going to be a great quarterback. But to start an offensive team with a bad line, you have to ground it with that running game. Chubb is the most important Brown right now. And let's see, week in and week out, how they get him involved to be able to set up all the other things.
And you made such a good point earlier. The game had the feel that Freddie Kitchens was trying to force his way into different situations.
Yeah.
Force the ball to Odell, force the ball to Callaway, first time being back. And when you do that, you're just going to get yourself in
Callaway
trouble.
Didn't even remember it's not college football, and you got to touch the guy to be down. After that interception, just watch them get up and run.
Kenny, what do the Cowboys need to do to get back on track?
Well, Jerry Jones also talked about it over the last 2 weeks. They played organizations, teams that had it together, and the Cowboys don't quite have it together. So for me, it starts with Dak Prescott taking care of the football. I mean, this is a team that wants to win time of possession. They want to play a very specific way. Now, I think it gets complicated a little bit just because you're dealing with some injuries up front on the offensive line. We recognize no Tyron Smith in the Green Bay game. Lyle Collins ended up tapping out in the second half against Green Bay after a first half that was miserable, being beat to sleep by Preston Smith. But as the loose pieces on this offensive line, it becomes exponentially harder for them to be able to run the football. And now you're going to have to rely on your quarterback to be able to win games for you, and I just don't know if Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott are up for the task because we haven't seen them do it. We haven't seen Dak Prescott be able to do that without Tyron Smith in the lineup, without Ezekiel Elliott in the lineup. A couple of years ago when they were missing Zeke for that six-game suspension, they also had Tyron Smith out of the lineup, and it wasn't pretty for Dak Prescott. He had more turnovers than he did touchdowns, and so I question whether or not Dak is capable of doing it. I know we all thought that his game has evolved going into year four after he started the season with the first three games, the performances that he put together, but after seeing him against a step up in class defensively, I don't know if Dak Prescott is the guy that we saw early on.
I'm still more optimistic about Dak's throwing. I could make legitimate excuses for two of the three interceptions. And football is a game of momentum. If Amari Cooper catches that pass, even if he just falls down, they're going to get some points. And they once Green Bay got out on him, I don't believe Dak's decision-making was bad because they couldn't run the ball. With that offensive line, wholesale changes. You got a new left tackle. You got a new right tackle. Dak didn't play awful, but as a team, how do they become more creative? Because to me, in their running game, how they run the ball. Now, I know San Francisco has a different running attack, but they ran some plays last night that I hadn't seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. I've only seen it run under several. Like, Harbaugh ran some stuff like it. Baltimore ran some things like it. So is Kellen Moore, who Jason Garrett, Jerry Jones appointed as the offensive coordinator, is he the man for this job? Because things are getting ready to tighten up, because to me, Dak is plenty good enough. All right? Amari Cooper in the wide receiving core, but with the offensive line change, can I put three receivers on the field? Do I need to go to a more powerful lineup, two tight ends, put a fullback in? So I believe they got to make some changes, and I believe that offensive staff, John Kitna, first year as the quarterback coach, Kellen Moore, which is handpicked, and to me, he is the most important Cowboy and Cowboy staffer over the next month to see if he can be creative to give them some easy yardage, because right now they're not getting anything easy on the field, Nick.
Let's talk about Tyron Smith for a minute. He's missed 10 games since Dak's been in the league. The Cowboys in games he plays are 30-16. In games he misses, they're 6-4. So they still have a winning record, but barely. When Tyron Smith plays, they score 25 points a game. When he doesn't play, they score fewer than 20 points per game. You cannot have your left tackle be that important, be the guy that moves the line, or in theory would move the Vegas line the way your quarterback would. A 6 point per game difference over a non-small sample size when your left tackle's in versus left tackle's out. So that's a problem. And that is the concern with Dak, is how good is he when some of the recipe is disturbed? When you don't have Amari Cooper, we saw it wasn't great. When Zeke wasn't there, those six games, wasn't great. When Zeke doesn't run for when he is there, but doesn't run for 75 yards, they're 1-8. Well, now I know some of that is he doesn't run for 75 yards because they're down big, so some of that is a little noise rather than signal, but there is some correlation there. When Tyron Smith is out of the lineup, the offense falls off to where they're not even scoring three touchdowns a game. All of those things individually might not be an indictment on the quarterback. Collectively, they are. And so I think Jerry is concerned because Jerry sees the team I see, which is a team that is clearly an above-average football team and will clearly has the personnel on both sides of the ball to dominate inferior competition. But inferior competition doesn't matter if your goal is to make it to at least a conference championship game for the first time in a quarter century. Because there is no inferior competition in the playoffs. There is no Giants you're going to get to play in the playoffs. And I'm yet to see a piece of evidence from Dallas this season that says when they play the types of teams they're going to have to play in January, if they get to January, that they will be able to beat those teams.
Look, in the last couple of games, we saw what? More turnovers, more unforced errors, more mistakes from this Dallas team. And then after last game, you heard Dak come out and say, perhaps we were a little too confident coming in. We were a little too full of ourselves. We thought too much of ourselves. Mm-hmm. How much of it is just on Kellen Moore calling different plays, better plays, more creative plays? And how much is on the mindset of this team right now?
Well, here's the thing. I think Kellen Moore has to improve. I mean, the way that they got beat on Sunday at home, that was a thorough whipping by the Green Bay Packers. And so I think there's fault all the way around. You can look at Kellen Moore. You can look at Dak Prescott. You can look at their head coach, Jason Garrett. Another area that we need to look at, that defense for the Dallas Cowboys. Because as well as they played on Sunday night against the New Orleans Saints, they did not play well on Sunday against the Packers. I mean, Aaron Jones had a day, going for nearly 200 yards from scrimmage. You can't allow something like that to happen. He had four rushing touchdowns. The Dallas Cowboys got whipped up front in terms of that Green Bay Packers offensive line being able to run the football. And the Packers were missing a couple of offensive linemen, too. Yeah. Lane Taylor, their left guard, was out for their game. Mm-hmm. They ended up losing their center midway through that ball game, and yet they were still able to find a way to be effective, create some movement on the point of attack on that Dallas Cowboys defensive front. So that D-line, they need to be better. Those guys have to show up. Jalen Smith, LVE, Leighton Van Der Esch, they need to play better as well. They didn't play well on Sunday. I think that's one of the areas where the Cowboys can improve on their execution and mm-hmm. give their offense some time to find themselves while they're struggling with the injuries up front.
Yeah, Kellen Moore, as far as he's concerned, there should be a lot of pressure on him because he was unknown. We know where he came from, what type of experience did he get that he would leapfrog all these people, that he's the offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. So there is a lot of pressure there. But one thing we need to realize in the NFL, when you have a poor offensive line, it's hard to impossible to play well. Now, there's only three quarterbacks right now with bad offensive line play that are playing well. That's Russell Wilson in Seattle. That's Deshaun Watson in Houston. And that's Tom Brady. And people might question, is Tom playing well? Tom's playing plenty well enough to be able to get them past victories, and he'll be fine in December and in January.
Definitely, but Russell and Deshaun.
But you look around the league. You look around the league, and if you want to look at quarterback play, you look at that offensive line. All right, so before we start trying to say Dak has regressed, oh, we need to protect him and everything,
right,
y'all let me know the guys that are playing good behind a bad offensive line, and I'll let you know that it's a list, a very, very short list, and those are the guys that are on it.
Even my guy, Patrick Mahomes, this past weekend, his left tackle was out, left guard got injured during the game, the offensive line got whooped all game long, and he had the worst game of his career. It's a totally fair point, and it also speaks to the specialness, if you will, of Deshaun and of Russell Wilson, because they've dealt with that basically the entirety of their respective careers.
All right, we've got to take a break. All right, checking in with the Eagles now, coming off a win over the Jets Sunday, a win which masked the fact that this offense is struggling so far this season, sitting at just 25th in yards per game. And now the tough part of their schedule awaits them in the Vikings and the Cowboys and the Bills, all on the road. Head coach Doug Peterson says that wins can cover up a lot of flaws. So, Chris, how should the Eagles feel about their team right now at this point in the season?
Right now, I wouldn't be overconfident. They got a three-game stretch, and, they're going to have to really do some work. If their dreams and aspirations are postseason, winning their division compared to being a wild card, the next 3 weeks could make or break their season. We always talk about how good they are, defensive front. They have depth. Well, they're going to need it based on the teams that they're facing over the next 3 weeks. And that would be Minnesota, at Dallas, at Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going on the road, so it's going to be a lunch pail type atmosphere. All those in their defensive line, they could win all three of those games. If you look at the matchups, who they're going to be facing, the problems that the team are having, you can go by one. Let's go to Minnesota. Man, they're getting ready to throw Kirk Cousins off the Vikings ship now. The Vikings are the nicest people in the world, unless you are a bad quarterback. And to the rest of the people, oh, yeah. What about Dak? We've been talking about that, going against that offensive line. Two replacement tackles, I would say huge advantage to Philadelphia. And we know in Buffalo, they can't get that offensive side right with Josh Allen. So, man, they can make some hay over the next 3 weeks. And their big people are a lot better than those three teams. So I believe that the Eagles, keep your perspective right. This is a tough 3 weeks. October is going to be a tough, tough month. But get some wins in October, it could lead to a lot of good things in December and January.
We were talking about their season being teetering when they were heading to Green Bay, when they're 1-2, when Dallas is 3-0. Things can change quick, especially early in the season. Now they've got to feel like we're yet to play our best football. We still don't have Deshaun. We've dealt with much more injuries than the average NFL team, and we're tied for first in our division. We are fine, all things considered. We're in the only division in the NFC where 3-2 gets you anywhere. Right. I said it yesterday. 11 of the 16 teams in the NFC are 3-2 or better. So you only have five teams in the conference with a losing record, but because of the division they're in with the Giants and Washington, with Dallas coming back to the pack, their slow start didn't kill them. Chris pointed out the next three games because specifically they're all on the road against teams with weak offenses. But it's really the next 5 weeks where you play Minnesota, Dallas, Buffalo, Chicago, New England. All five of those teams, the offenses can be had, and the defenses are exceptional. So that while Chris was pointing out that Philly's D-line coming off a 10-sack performance, Philly went into that game against the Jets with 2 sacks on the season, got 10 of them this weekend against the Jets. The Philly D-line can make their money over the next 5 games. That Philly offensive line is going to have to earn its money over the next 5 games.
No doubt.
Because Minnesota's got some pass rushers.
I didn't have time to break both sides there.
Right, absolutely. Minnesota, Dallas, Buffalo, all on the road, great defensive fronts. Chicago, the London game notwithstanding, great defensive front. And we know how good the New England defense is. So this is also one of the reasons why, if you're Philly, losing that game to Atlanta, an Atlanta team that otherwise would be winless on the year, That one's going to sting a little bit. The following week, losing that game to Detroit, even though a home game to Detroit, even though Detroit's a little better than we thought, that one's going to sting a little bit because you knew this was coming. But, of course, for Dallas and Philadelphia, it's going to be hard to judge either of these teams until we see them play each other.
Right.
Over the last 3 years, to me, Philadelphia, when healthy, has been better than Dallas. Philadelphia has not beaten Dallas in a game that Zeke has played in. And so you got to make sure you're not looking past your opponent this week at Minnesota, getting ready for Dallas, because you go into that game 3-3, very different feel than 4-2.
No, it's a tough five-game stretch for them. They can't look over. And you said keep your sort of keep your wits about you. But when Doug Peterson says wins can cover up a lot of flaws, what are their flaws? Is it what you said? Is it that offensive line? Is it that offense?
Some of it is the offensive line. When a coach talks about a good quarterback covering up flaws, especially when you win, because then you don't point those things out. Someone gets beat on the interior line, all right? He decides, I'm going to get rid of the football before that guy gets to me. Either that, he switches the protection. These are both ways to be able to help people out. Left tackle struggling. I'm going to start moving the line to my left, make my back go to the right, get the extra protector, not have any seepage inside, and make them, if they're going to get me, come from the outside. The quarterback's in control of that. The wide receivers, if they're not getting any type of separation, putting the ball so pinpoint that even good defense can't stop them from moving the sticks. And reading the defenses, figuring out what's the weak spot in this defense and orchestrating the offense. And that's another thing that Carson Wentz, in this extra year of growing, being a starting quarterback, he's starting to understand those things. But all 3-2s aren't the same. If you look at Carolina, they're 3-2, but they've won 3 in a row. Dallas is 3-2, but they've lost 2 in a row.
Yep.
The Raiders, they're 3-2. They've won 2 in a row. And Philadelphia is 3-2, and they've won 2 in a row. So the teams that do have that 3-2 record, they're not all the same.
And they don't all feel the same about how they got
there. They definitely don't. But they're on the uptip on this winning streak. What about a 3-game winning streak? How long? I mean, that would take you a long way. So trying to stack these wins when they have this 2-game winning streak becomes very important.
And I'll add one other thing, because if you're not in the New York area and that game, or the Philly area, you didn't watch Jets-Eagles because it wasn't one of the marquee games. It was one of the 10 games on at 1 o'clock Eastern. The Philly offense did not play well. And I think that's what Doug Peterson's talking about.
Right.
If I had told Jets fans going into the game, Philly's going to pass for less than 200 yards, rush as a team for less than 90 yards, and score 2 offensive touchdowns in the game, will you take it? The answer would be a resounding yes. 100%. The reason Philadelphia dominated was because they scored 2 defensive touchdowns, and the Jets had 160 yards of offense. The Jets had one of the worst offensive games. In fact, I think it was 140 yards of offense. It was terrible, whatever it was. So the Philly defense annihilated the Jets. The offense has some things to work out still, and they seem to really be missing DeSean Jackson.
I was just going to say, not only are they not playing well, but how much will they continue to struggle with DeSean Jackson out? And now it looks like it's going to be a few more weeks.
Well, they have a good wide receiving core. When you add DeSean, it makes them great because he's such a threat. Either they're going to play either cover 2, where you take a safety out of his side and to cover his side, which you don't have any run support, but it opens up other things on the field. If Alshon Jeffrey, if he is the first down touchdown maker in the red zone, if Ertz is the number one wide receiver, all that is set the table by the speed that D-Jack and the respect that in defensive coordinators have for him on that side of the ball. So for me, yeah, they're a good receiving core, but they're great, and they do miss him in there. And him and Carson Wentz had immediate chemistry.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Are the Browns that bad or are the Niners that good? Keep in mind, San Fran and New England, the only 2 undefeated teams now left in the NFL. Outspoken Niner Richard Sherman has a message for the team's doubters.
You want idiots to sound like idiots, but you want them to hold their position the whole year. Like, don't flip-flop with us. Like if you said we weren't going to make it, you said we were some way early on, just stick with that position. Hold it. Don't try to give us credit now. Don't try to give us credit now. Just stick. If you had us ranked 25, keep us ranked 25. If you had us going home early, if you had us going 3-3 and whatever, have us going 3-whatever. You know what I mean? At least stick by your word, because I want you to sound like an idiot at the end.
Richard Sherman committed to take integrity, which I respect.
I was just going to say, it is a lot of energy to make that point. You just won a game. You're undefeated. It's a lot of energy to get people to make sure they're on the bandwagon, off the bandwagon, stay with your respective bandwagons. How good, CC, are the 49ers?
I believe they got a good roster. They really do have a good roster. I think if the one weakness that they have, I'm concerned about their field goal kicker, who's been amazing for a number of years, over the last 4 years, the most consistent kicker in the history over a four-year period. And then all of a sudden, yesterday, he couldn't find his way to the stadium. So I am concerned. I'm going to put that one in the back part of my brain. And this offseason, with all the cap space they had, they've decided they're going to build this team a different way. They still need a difference maker at wide receiver, because I do believe they will have problems running the ball. But when you get in big, big games, you need a guy outside of George Kittle. And George Kittle, to me, is the second best tight end that we got in pro football behind Kelce in Kansas City. He's phenomenal. He's a great end-of-the-line blocker, better than Kelce, great route runner, has tremendous speed, and is really under the radar. People don't even know what quality is. But they don't have a wide receiver that Jimmy Garoppolo can drop back and throw the ball to. And I believe right now that's the only weakness that they do have. They're in the tough division in the NFC West. Seattle being there, the Rams being there, it's going to be a knockdown dragout. Can they stay healthy? Because I do believe that Shanahan is underrated as a play caller. I'd like to be able to see them in some big games to see what Garoppolo has under the hood.
Listen, Shanahan is excellent, obviously. And shout out to him. They're up 28-3 yesterday, and it ended up a lot better than the last time he was up 28-3. So I'm sure that feels a little bit better than the most notable one. Here's my concern with the Niners. You do not doubt their big people on either side. Their defensive line got all those high draft picks. Their offensive line is doing this without their best offensive lineman. Joe Staley is out with a broken leg, but it's not the type of broken leg, I suppose, where he's going to be out for the season.
Yes.
So at some point, he's going to be back. McGlinchey's been excellent. The draft capital he's thrown on the defense is excellent. They don't have a legitimate receiving core. And that was the concern going into the year. It's Dante Pettis, the rookie Debo. Goodwin, the track star, is their most reliable receiver, I suppose. I mean, add this to the list of teams I say should trade for A.J. Green. We're at about a third of the league.
Right.
It'd be better if they traded for A.J. Green. I also still need to see a little bit more from Jimmy Garoppolo. And just in that, he hasn't started very many games. He hasn't started a full season yet, even though he's in his sixth season in the NFL.
Right. In last night's game, Baker Mayfield has more starts than Jimmy Garoppolo.
Exactly right. And so, and maybe I was a little too quick to anoint Baker, but Baker at least had the pedigree of number one overall pick, set the NFL record for passing
tremendous arm talent
as a rookie. And in college was a much more prolific player than Jimmy Garoppolo. And the other part of it, the reason to be concerned about the Niners, it's very interesting they played the Browns last night. The Browns, when you looked at their schedule, you said, man, that first half of it is brutal. If they can survive it,
500.
Which now they're going to struggle to be, it would appear. The last half of the year for the Browns, you get Cincinnati twice, you get Miami, you get Arizona, you get Pittsburgh a couple times. The Niners have the exact opposite problem. The Niners' final six are Green Bay, Baltimore, New Orleans, Atlanta, the Rams, and Seattle. And so how good do they have to be going into that final six games, given their division, given the depth of the NFC? So I will do what Richard Sherman asked me to do. I was skeptical of them going into the year. I am still skeptical. But the defense has been elite, top five, and statistically, and they're averaging 200 yards rushing per game. That's going to win you a lot of football games.
I just want to ask you one more question about Jimmy Garoppolo, because whenever someone asks me, what do you think about Garoppolo? I don't know. I'm not really sure. I mean, he's played five games. They're undefeated.
Right.
Are we on board with Jimmy Garoppolo? Is it four games?
My apologies. We don't know enough, and they don't have the type around him to evaluate him fairly. He hadn't been out there enough as a starter. When he shattered his knee in the third game last season, that prevented a lot of information, him being out there as a starter, leading the team. Right now, they are an offense that has a quarterback. We just don't know how good he is. And it's going to be hard to evaluate him when you don't have an elite wide receiver. George Kittle is an elite tight end, though.
And they haven't had to rely on him yet. 200 yards per game rushing in a top three scoring defense.
Right.
You're not going to have to rely on your quarterback that often.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.